And welcome into another post-game edition of Spits and Suds. Thank you so much for joining us. Boy, I'll tell you what, home cooking is a beautiful thing. Who's your daddy tonight? Evgeny Dodonov scoring twice for the Stars in a 7-2 win against the Bruins at the AAC Stars. Perfect record now, 7-0-0 at home. And we're going to talk about it with you. Some interesting angles to talk about tonight, as the next game up is an interesting matchup against the Minnesota Wild. So we'll see about that on Saturday. But let's focus on tonight as they take down an original six Boston Bruins team, and really nice wins against the Bruins this year. And joining us, the greatness of Robert Tiffin at Robert Tiffin. On Twitter/X, you can always check out his website. I think, to me, it's one of the terrific places to go for daily thoughts, and it's called Stars Thoughts. And Robert covers the team among the best in town, so you want to add Robert to your roster as far as Stars coverage and go to that website every day. He also writes for D Magazine. Great piece last week regarding his trip in Finland. So some nice pieces to talk about there. He joins us live from the AAC. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Hi, Gavin. Doing well. It's always fun when there are a lot of goals scored, and even more fun when they're all for one team. So, yeah,
heck doing pretty yeah, well. Heck yeah, and I guess we should pop a little here we go, Robert. Yeah.
Ooh, yep.
Twist top. Nice. Cheers, my friends.
There you go.
Congratulations. All right, let's start with some interesting angles as far as lineup shuffling and just the lineup in general. Matt Dumba, once again, another healthy scratch. Brendan Smith and Nils Lundqvist, I think they're a really good pairing right now. They seem to gel well together, but it's interesting that we had a Matt Dumba starting the season on the first line, pairing with Miro Heiskanen, and now to out of the lineup.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said about, well, for the defense, first of all, like you said, Smith and Lundqvist are looking great right now. I mean,
yeah,
Smith has 3 points in his last two games.
He's a point machine.
Yeah, he's an offensive force that can't be stopped right now. So I don't know how you take him out of the lineup when he's doing that. And I mean, Lundqvist hit a crossbar, and he's been really solid the last two games. Yeah. Lundqvist also broke up he played an odd man rush really well after Smith broke a stick early in this game too. And Lundqvist went back and was able to prevent the pass, and Oettinger was able to save the shot. So yeah, they've both been looking good in this game. But of course, Dumba's the big story, since this is the second game in a row he's been scratched. And yeah, there's a lot to be said there. He started out the season. Their hope was, it seems pretty clear from both training camp and how they started the season, the hope was that Dumba would come in, be the righty up top with Miro, and then you can balance out the pairings below that with Lyubushkin and Lundqvist at the other two right side spots. But the problem, as we've seen in the past, is when you put another lefty with Heiskanen, then you have two pairings and three righties, and none of those righties really play on their offside. And that when Lundqvist sat in Florida, that made a little bit more sense. Okay, we got to get Smith in, and now we've got four lefties, so okay, someone has to sit. But this seems less about the handedness and more about Dumba's play in particular. DeBoer was pretty clear. It was a coach's decision in Pittsburgh. And, you know, after a game like that, it's probably tough to change too much the lineup, although Oscar Beck did come in for this one. But right now, my belief from what I'm seeing and what the coaches are saying is that they think these are their six best defensemen right now. And that's pretty shocking from, like you said, where we were in the first game of the season.
Yeah, and I want to keep mentioning the turnaround for Nils Lundqvist, because we don't really talk about it. And when we're not talking about Nils Lundqvist and his minutes played, I think that's actually a really good thing. You know, it's kind of like a defensive back. When you don't hear his name in football, that means his coverage is actually pretty good. And I'm seeing him a lot more defensively. And you're right. I think he's playing much better. I think just his confidence alone, Robert, I'm really excited about that. And, you know, we went from a player that we were really questioning, why did the Stars sign him? But more importantly, why did Nils Lundqvist want to re-sign with this franchise when it didn't seem like he could, you know, crack the lineup on a regular basis, especially in the playoffs? And now we are seeing that, you know, so far it looks like a really good decision from him.
Yeah, I was actually talking with Lundqvist this morning after morning skate about one thing he's been trying to do lately is figure out other ways to provide offense, because it's hard. It's harder than ever to get shots through. Players are just too good at blocking lanes and things like that. And Lundqvist is a player for where, as much as he needed to improve his defensive game, particularly in the eyes of the coaching staff, he does still want to be, and the coaches also want him to be contributing offensively as well. And that's really when he's at his best, when he's solid defensively and contributing offensively. And it's actually funny. My another writer here, Sam Nessler, in the press box, he and I were mentioning, you know, Nils had a pretty good night in that exact sense you mentioned, Gavin, where, yeah, you haven't really noticed him too much. And that's really good for him. That shows you how solid and reliable he's been. And right after we said that, he hit a crossbar with a shot in the third period. So maybe it's coming on. When I was talking to Lundqvist this morning, he was talking about finding different ways to shoot pucks. And we were talking about the difference between shooting to score and shooting for a tip and everything that goes into that, whether you're shooting along the ice or, you know, trying to hit a teammate stick up high. So Lundqvist is trying to find those ways to contribute. He's not just settling for, okay, I'm better than I've been defensively. Sorry, the AAC crew is celebrating something as they're switching the flooring over for the Mavericks.
It's all good, man. It makes
they're having a good time. Yeah, they're all clapping and applauding. They're doing a great job. All right.
We can confirm, due to the sound effects, that you truly are at the AAC.
Yeah, this is proof of life, I guess.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, the defense has been good. And Dumba, by way of contrast, he kind of started. I mean, he's a veteran, right? He came in as a veteran. It seemed like, you know, if of the three players, honestly, of the three righties, I should say, he, Lyubushkin, and Lundqvist, Dumba's spot was the one I would have said was the most secure at the start of the season, just based on track record and based on where he's played. He was only a year or two removed from being a top pairing defenseman, really. And pretty quickly, I mean, he had that big mistake against Winnipeg that led directly to a goal, just a pretty, pretty ugly turnover. You know, I'm sure he'd be the first to tell you that's just a bad play, bad turnover in the middle of the ice. But since then, my sense is that, and DeBoer even mentioned this the other night, that, you know, well, you know, Nils sat a game. And even when talking about Maverick Bork being scratched this game this morning, DeBoer also mentioned Lundqvist having gone through a similar sort of process as a younger player, where sometimes you're scratched and that's part of it, but the trajectory is always upwards. The sense for me right now is that Lundqvist is progressing well on that trajectory. And
yeah,
there's a spot right now because Dumba has lost some trust. And frankly, he hasn't looked good. The underlying numbers aren't good either. Dumba just has not been the player the Stars needed him to be. And given how kind of up and down their season's been, especially lately, they need to get on a run. DeBoer said this morning, we need to get on a run. We have to rip off some wins. And you're not going to do that if you constantly are battling, trying to figure out, okay, what's my best defense pairing? How can we get Haskinen going? So it seems for right now, and we'll see what they do against Minnesota, but it seems for right now, they're content to say, yeah, he's a new free agent signing, but these are our best six defensemen right now, and we're okay rolling with them. So we'll see what happens.
I think it's really one thing that I want to compliment Pete DeBoer and his staff on is, and maybe this wouldn't happen in the past, he's not afraid to sit players. And, you know, if they're not performing, and we clearly saw that with Lundqvist last year, and, you know, Dumba on a multi-year deal, and saying, you know what, you're not good enough right now, you have to fight your way back in. And we could actually make the same case for Maverick Bork. And you had just mentioned Maverick Bork, and I do find that fascinating, because here you are, the AHL MVP, and you know, it hasn't started like we all thought. I think we probably kind of overhyped. It's very Wyatt Langford-like, where before Wyatt Langford ever played in a Texas Rangers uniform, we had him as a potential MVP candidate in the big leagues. And I think the same thing with Maverick Bork is, it's going to take time, and it's going to take adjustments, and you know, it's just not happening like everyone would like to see. Flip side, Oscar Beck is a really nice surprise this year. That was a terrific goal, and I love his size. I love his work in the corners. You know, pretty tough to say Oscar Beck deserves to be bumped out of the lineup based on his play in that fourth line once again coming through. In fact, all the lines, all the forward lines having at least a goal tonight. So it's, you know, you have a pretty good squad, Robert, when you're seeing players that you would expect to be in the lineup getting bumps.
Yep. Yeah, it's depth, right? They've said before, I think DeBoer even said maybe in Finland, we're not Edmonton. We don't have a Connor McDavid, right? Or we don't have an Austin Matthews. We don't have one of those, you know, and you can debate whether or not that's true. But at least right now, in terms of winning Hart trophies, winning scoring titles, they don't really have a player like that right now. And the players they have who might potentially be that player haven't quite looked like it this year either. But what DeBoer said is our strength as a team is depth. And that means you have to get that performance up and down the lineup so that when one guy isn't going, you have someone else who can play up the lineup and play really well. And Oscar Beck's a great example of that. He's 24. He'll be 25 in March, I think. This is a veteran kind of AHLer in a certain sense. He's kind of at that now or never point a little bit. And he's been good in the chances he's had this year. We asked him after the game tonight, someone asked him, did you kind of feel like this was coming based on your play? And he said, yes. Sometimes players will say, well, I'm not focused on offense. You know, you just hope it'll come. But he said, yes, he felt like it was coming. And he, especially playing with Sam Steele and Colin Blackwell, he's felt like their line has been doing well and producing and getting chances. And that's all you can ask for. Right. And he's also, because he's in that 24, 25 range, he's not an AHL MVP. He's kind of an ideal player to come in and out of the lineup as needed, because his game isn't one where you need to get hot and need to build a lot of confidence. You've got to give Oscar Beck a lot of credit. He's played a really similar game, especially since moving to wing, actually, after the first couple of games of the season, since moving to wing, even though everyone kind of thought, including me, that he was going to come up and be a fourth line center. He's looked very consistent, and you know, he got rewarded by doing exactly what you're supposed to do on the fourth line: skate hard, go to the right areas. And you know what? Sometimes you shove a one-handed poke at the puck and you go bar down on Jeremy Swayman. So that's a pretty great first NHL goal for him.
I'm looking at, and it's kind of tough to decipher this when it's a 7-2 victory, kind of time on ice gets kind of screwed up here and there. And you're going to play some of your lower lines a little bit more, obviously fourth line minutes. You're going to play Nils Lundqvist, Brendan Smith a little bit more, rest some of your regulars as far as take a shift or two off. But, you know, one of the things is, are we now set that, Duchesne, Marchment, and Sagan, that's the first line right now?
I think in terms of production, it obviously is. And even in terms of power play, they've moved that unit playing with Miro. So they're treating that unit as kind of their top offensive players. Now, the question in terms of minutes, like you said, I think there's actually a pretty good argument to be made that even if they are by far your most productive players, they're also a little bit on the, I hate to say this, older side, as someone good who's, point. You know, yeah. 5 years older than Duchesne or Sagan. They seem to be working really well with the amount of minutes they're getting. So I don't know that the coaching staff is all that anxious to bump up their minutes. I mean, certainly they're, you know, just ask Mason Marchment. He's scoring just fine in the minutes he's getting. So maybe the last thing you want to do is burn them out or start asking more of them when they're already giving you plenty from the minutes they're getting. And I think the team really believes, as the coaches have said, that the quote-unquote top-line guys like Hintz and Robertson, they need to be creating offense. They need to be your top-line players. They're younger. They're healthier. They're the guys that you should be able to rely on to score and do those things, because if they're not doing that, then you have other problems.
Tyler Sagan, another nice night. Obviously, that line's producing. But just, you know, overall, it's nice when you hit those milestones to say, wow, I mean, what a career he's having. It's fascinating to watch his development, because I think, you know, one of the things that has elongated his career is, you know, Matt Duchesne's been a nice side piece for him and has really elevated his game along with Marchment. But the other thing I really like, Robert, is the evolution as far as being a two-way player. He's definitely not a liability out there. And, you know, so the evolution of Tyler Sagan from just a point guy to, a pretty good two-way player, is interesting. But, you know, you look at it and obviously, nice night against his old team. He loves beating up on the Bruins. And so, you know, I just wanted to stick tap him for a second. I just think that it's a heck of a run for Sagan. I don't know if he's going to hit 1,000 points, but it's a heck of a run.
Yeah. He's got a little ways to go still for that. It'll all depend on his, I mean, look, this year even, right? DeBoer said he's dealing with something. There's soreness when he plays back-to-backs. They're going to try to avoid playing him back-to-backs for that reason. So he's not 25 years old anymore, right? And he might even end up needing, you know, some other procedure or something like that. Who knows? Even, you know, at the end of this year or something like that. We'll have to see. But the thing is, Sagan, even on that line, all three of those players, it's been really impressive to see how each of them are playing kind of a different role than usual.
Yeah.
And they're excelling. Like Marchment, when they got him from Florida, he was kind of known for scoring way above a fourth liner space, even though he was kind of playing on their fourth line. Duchesne for a long time in Nashville, especially, was a top line guy. And Sagan for a long time was an elite center. And, you know, then he's obviously moved more over to wing as his career's gone on, and that's been a better fit for him, especially with some of the health things that he's had to deal with. So you have this line of three different, very different sorts of players, and they're playing in three kind of different roles than they usually do, and it's just meshing better than anyone could ask for. So it's been really cool. And I do think, as much as Sagan won't say, yes, it's been, almost 12 years since he was in Boston, I think it's equal parts. In a game like tonight, I have to wonder if it's not just about beating an old team in Boston, but he also has his old head coach, Jim Montgomery, on the bench over on the other side, a head coach who kind of stood by and talked about the culture of mediocrity in 2019 or 18-19 that season. And then also a head coach who kind of tacitly endorsed Jim Leitz, making some comments to Sean Shapiro about Tyler Sagan and Jamie Benn. So, obviously it's not in Sagan's best interest to be vindictive or anything like that. But I have to think there's a little extra satisfaction in continuing to be a responsible player, piling up points in that sort of situation and against opponents and coaches like that. I mean, DeBoer even said this morning, you know, he always gets the questions from the visiting Boston media about Sagan. And DeBoer said the two words that he really would apply to Sagan that he wouldn't necessarily have based on what he'd heard of Sagan and known of Sagan a few years back are leadership and maturity. And that's about as high a compliment as any coach can give when it comes to that. So credit to Sagan.
Yeah, absolutely. What a trade by Jim Nill looking back for Denis Gurianov getting Evgeny Dodonov and what he's provided. We all saw the potential in Gurianov. We wish it happened, but it didn't on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. At the same time, Dodonov the guy can play on the fourth line and perform. And, you know, I hearken back, and I brought this up a couple times last year when he came back into the lineup and they asked him about playing on the fourth line or the third line or even the first line. He just blatantly said, I don't care. I just want to win. And I thought that showed a tremendous maturity for a guy that was a point production guy for early in his career and now, you know, just wants to contribute as much as possible. And tonight, very, very impressive. Especially, you know, playing on a line, he performed probably better than Hinson Robertson. I did want to ask, what was the perspective in the press box? I watched the penalty which caused the breakaway, and I personally felt after watching it several times that Dodonov leaned in, which he's supposed to do to block the opposing player, but with that he kind of went down to a knee. I felt at that point that based on that, and you can't watch a replay necessarily, but I thought based on that, that should have negated it. It should have been a 2-minute minor than putting it on center ice. What did you think?
Yeah, we were a little surprised. A couple of us who talked about it, we were a little surprised that he got the penalty shot. Yeah. Because referees just seem to be kind of reticent to call penalty shots in general. I've had plays that looked way more like a guy being kind of classically hauled down from behind or whatever that don't get a penalty shot as a result. And this is one where I think the main thing is that he didn't get a scoring chance off. So whether or not he actually did get dragged down or, you know, fed the penalty as much as anything, my read is that the official was waiting to see, is he going to get a shot off or not? And when he didn't, then the official's calculation is, well, if I judge it was a penalty on him with a clear path to the net, and he doesn't get a scoring chance in the play, I kind of probably have to. I mean, by the book, technically, you have to call penalty shot. Now, we know they don't always call those, even with that criteria, but they did tonight. But, yeah, I was a little surprised by it. But, you know, I mean, DeBorsett, it was kind of a – I don't think he said turning point, but it was a critical moment because a 2-0 lead is much different than a 1-0 lead. And, of course, they ended up surrendering a goal while up 2-0 and almost a second goal with a huge save by Ottinger on – or two saves, really, on Brad Marchand. But that second save with just the very, very tip of his skate right at the end of the first period was huge. So that penalty shot goal from Dodonov ended up being massive. I also heard we were talking about it on the way down to the press availability at the end of the game that Dodonov is like 4 for 5 in his career in penalty shots. And Sagan heard that after the interview and kind of looked over at Dodonov and said, "What? You're 4 for 5?" And Dodonov kind of looked at him. He's like, "Oh, I thought I was 5 for 6, but okay."
I mean, Swayman didn't even have a chance. Like that was just a wow.
It was a great move. I watched it back a few times and I still can't decide exactly what Swayman was thinking. He flinches, but I can't. My initial thought was, oh, he was flinching because he was getting ready to like push over a little bit because he thinks Dodonov's going to deke maybe. So that's why the arm comes away from the body just naturally because he's getting ready to move. It's also possible he was preparing to poke check or faking a poke check or something. Either way, Dodonov said he saw the hole, quote, and so he shot it there. So if you take the shooter at his word, I think shooters are always good at seeing the holes where they shot afterwards when they talk about it, where it's hard to believe that they saw it at the time. But I, you know, he scored 2 goals tonight, so I'm going to give Dodonov the benefit of the doubt and say he saw that gap under the arm and he put it where he meant to. And given how successful he's been in penalty shots, who's going to doubt him?
Yeah. Still a long way to go, but wow, what a season Jake Ottinger's having. Mm-hmm. And, you know, clearly the last 2 games, he wasn't tested as far as shots on goal. But even in the Pittsburgh game, there were some critical shots that he saved. And that was a massive save that he made, like you said, toward the end of the first. That game could have been 2-2, you know, with that toe save, clearly showing his size, his goals against now. Just about 2.35 and, you know, dropping. And the flip side is, which is fascinating, you know, we know about the Jeremy Swayman holdout and, you know, it probably will come together for the Bruins goaltender, but right now sitting at 3.35 with an 888 goals against, just, you know, really tough. The other thing is that, you know, Boston from a I pulled this earlier from a goal differential standpoint, they are fourth worst in the Eastern Conference at minus 11. And that probably changed as of tonight. So just kind of a rough start for the Bruins.
Yeah. It's bad. I was really surprised, by the way, speaking of goaltending. Well, 2 things really. First on Ottinger, I think he needed this. You know, the Pittsburgh game was great, but Pittsburgh is a mess right now. They're just a mess. So it was great for Ottinger to have a bounce back game after that Winnipeg debacle where he wasn't at his best and certainly the team wasn't at their best either. And, you know, all the chance of U.S. backup when he's facing the presumptive U.S. starter for the Four Nations tournament, Connor Hellebuyck. But tonight he was facing Jeremy Swayman, who's also in that conversation for a U.S. goalie for that team. And I was surprised that Jim Montgomery left Swayman in after going down, I think six goals. He gave up 6 goals or maybe, I think it was 5 goals. Maybe I think they got the 5th goal right at the end. And then they scored the 6th goal right at the start of the 3rd period. But they left Swayman in after, you know, the Stars scored like 3 goals in a row in the last few minutes. And I was wondering at the time if maybe Montgomery didn't want to pull Swayman because of that matchup. Like even if the game's already out of hand, he didn't want the embarrassment of, he got pulled in a game and would go through the exact same thing that that Ottinger went through against Hellebuyck. So I don't know if he was thinking that far. Coaches will probably say they don't care about that. Those tournaments, they're only thinking about the game. But Boston is, I mean, they've had, DeBoer mentioned it this morning, Boston is really in that same, has been in that one step forward, one step back mode. The Stars have been in their last half dozen games or so, where you know, Boston's right around 500, maybe even just above 500, but they've had some bad losses. They've been scraping some wins together, but they've gotten shut out in a few different games over the last 5-10 games or so. So when they lose, they tend to look pretty bad. So you have to wonder, I mean, you know, after the first Stars victory, 3 power play goals, people were talking about Jim Montgomery in the hot seat, yelling at Brad Marchand on the bench and all these things. You have to wonder, what's the bar here? Are the Bruins even going to settle for being at 500 or just above 500? Or would they make a change, you know, even if they don't lose three straight or five straight or whatever, how long are they going to accept mediocrity? You know, culture of mediocrity, you might say, how long are they going to accept that before making a big change? So it's a good question, because these are not the Bruins that we saw 2 years ago in Jim Montgomery's year when they were, you know, getting off to a, what, setting the NHL record, I think, for points in the season. This looks just like a shell of that team.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see if Montgomery can pull it together and then return. So technically, it still is not a win against a team with a winning record, as the Bruins fall to 8-8-2. And I guess you have to play who's in front of you, Robert. You really do. And I don't want to take away from these last two games. But boy, I think Pittsburgh played their worst game of the season. You know, Boston, you know, looked okay at times, but really had no sustainable offense. That's why I look at Minnesota. And even before, after Winnipeg, I said Minnesota's the game to watch. If they beat Boston, if they beat Pittsburgh, and I'm not trying to over-dramatize this, but it would be nice. You need at some point to get that really nice win on your scorecard, and Minnesota would be terrific. They're ahead of you in the standings. You're in Minnesota. It's the Central Division. So I think, it, you know, Winnipeg, it was a big game. I think Minnesota's also a big game Saturday.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a big one. I mean, they've had tests, right? They had the two tests against Florida, and I think you can say they didn't pass those tests.
Yeah.
A little better in the second game. It was a close game, good game, could have gone either way. But they lost, and Florida deserved to win that second game, and certainly the first game, Finland as well. And Winnipeg, obviously, Winnipeg continued to look really, really good. I think Winnipeg might have actually lost tonight, but Winnipeg soundly trounced them in that game. So the Stars really have yet to rise to the challenge when it comes to a good team and, you know, looking good and winning a game. And DeBoer even said it this morning when we were talking about it, that, yeah, part of the reason that they've had kind of one step forward, one step back is because they've played, you know, a team that they're better than and then a team that's really good. And, you know, that's understandable. But at a certain point, you have to pass those tests. You have to prove that you belong in that conversation. And the Stars don't need to win the division this year. I really believe that as much as they'll say they do, they would be perfectly fine with getting second or third in the division this year if it meant they had a pretty healthy team and they were rounding into pretty good form in the playoffs start. They proved they can win the division. They proved they can win the West in the regular season. But you to do that, you still need to prove that you can do something. You need to have some confidence going into the playoffs. And as much as you can get by beating up 20 of the teams and going, you know, 1-1 for 3 against the other 10 teams, yeah, at a certain point you have to prove that you can win big games, because when the playoffs come, the pressure ratchets up, and if you don't have confidence from having won a big game before, the best team in the world is gonna look a little rough. So I think if for nothing else, Minnesota also right now would be the Stars' first round playoff opponent, so it's even more important that they start getting some confidence against a team like that as soon as possible.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Andre Vasilevsky becomes the fastest goalie to 300 wins in NHL history as Tampa Bay defeats the Jets by the score of 4-1. That's the second loss of the season for Winnipeg. But man, Winnipeg's going through a gauntlet right now as far as goaltenders and teams. So
yeah,
tough stretch of the schedule for the Jets. But, you know, would they have to play? Everyone has to play everybody. So it's no longer just a strength of schedule like it once was or whatever, where, you know, some were on the schedule, some weren't on the schedule. Remember that few years, and then it changed over.
Yep.
And stuff. I truly do feel as though the NHL has it nailed down perfect this year, where you get to see every single team. Yeah. I always hated that when a certain team didn't come to your barn.
Yeah, it'd be like a whole division back when they had three divisions in the West and three in the East, and there'd be one division you just wouldn't see any of those teams.
Yeah. In a given year. So take us inside the American Airlines. One of the things that I love is with a 7-0 start at home with early goals like the Duchesne goal, it gets people, you know, pumped up early, which is great. Seemed really loud, but anytime you have an original six team coming to town, and anytime you have like the Bruins coming to town, where, you know, people that are Bruins fans only get to see them once a year, you do see a lot of black and gold in the crowd. What was it like from your perspective?
Yeah, there was, especially early, there was, seemed like, at least when I was driving here, there's a lot of extra traffic today, a lot of accidents and things like that on the roads. So first time this year, I've actually noticed the crowd not quite being full by puck drop, but it did fill up before too long. But yeah, there were a fair amount of Bruins fans. I would say not quite as many Bruins fans as there were Blackhawks fans. Chicago always draws well, even as bad as they've been the last couple of years. Chicago always draws well against Dallas. So not quite to that level, but yeah, there's a good contingent. There's always some old Boston Sagan jerseys you see down on the glass and things like that. DeBoer had a good line this morning when I think Mike Hajka asked him, you know, what do you attribute your success at home to this year, being undefeated at American Airlines Center? And DeBoer said, oh, I think media pressure, you know, just from you guys, you know, giving us a hard time about our home record last year. That's what I attribute it to. Of course, now our road record hasn't been as good. So I don't know, maybe you need to start pressuring us about that too.
Oh, that's great.
It's good. It's easy to laugh about those things, I guess, when you're getting the job done at home. But it's true. They needed to fix it, and they've done it. So yes, a lot of those wins have been against teams like Chicago or Seattle or San Jose or even Boston in this one. But, you know, like you said, you can only beat the teams in front of you. And to the Stars' credit, you know, yes, they're not winning the games against the best teams that they've gone up against, but they're also not losing most of the games they should be winning. They're winning those games. And that's how you get to a 10-5 record, despite everyone kind of agreeing the team doesn't quite look at nearly at its best. I think any team would take 10-5 out of the gate.
Yeah, I actually thought tonight, you know, minus some careless passes and turnovers at times, one which led to a Boston goal. Other than those, I thought this was one of their better, well-rounded games, actually. Boston, you could argue, is down this year. However, I just felt as though, but you know, Boston was they tried to exert their physicality, but I think the Stars utilized their speed. You know, I thought the Stars forwards kind of had the defensemen of the Bruins on the ropes at times. The Roope Hintz goal was tremendous effort. I mean, sliding between two Bruins defensemen, and those weren't small D-men. So, you know, those little things, I think, you know, were really impressive. All right, let's get some quick tweets in here before we have to let Robert go.
Well, one thing before we do that, I just want to add on to what you said, that those goals, like that Roope Hintz goal, that's huge. That was also a point where a couple of us are saying, you know, man, just like Pittsburgh, this is a game where the offense is exploding, and where Roope Hintz and Jason Robertson, you know, they need to be getting healthy on nights like this too. It can't only be Dodonov and Oscar Beck, and then, you know, the Duchesne line, and then almost right on cue, Jason Robertson feeds Roope Hintz for a goal. And Duchesne, who had that turnover you mentioned when he slipped and fell trying to curl on the ice. I always have a little bit more grace for a player in a situation like that than with the Dumba turnover. Not a lot more, but a little bit more, because that's a play I think Duchesne is perfectly capable of making, and either because of the ice situation or something, he just slipped and fell. Again, it's his fault. He would tell you, that's my fault. It's a bad play.
Yeah.
But he made up for it, right? He more than made up for it. That line continued. You know, it's funny. This game was really close early on. I mean, it was a tight game, 2-1 going after the first period. It could have gone either way. It looked like, boy, they need to get their act together. DeBoer even said he felt like the team was getting kind of sloppy after going up 2-0 and then 2-1, that they were kind of loose around Ottinger. And then to their credit, that Duchesne line continued to look dominant every time they were on the ice. Another two goals tonight. The Stars' depth came through. Dodonov with another goal in addition to the penalty shot. You have to give the team credit. Even when everything isn't perfect, this is a night where they did what they hung in. They hung around as long as they needed to. And then when they finally got rolling, it ended up being a walk for them. So maybe that's how the season will go too, where they start, it seems really dicey, start of the season, and then once they all get rolling, maybe it could work out the same way. So we'll see if this game is a little portent of that sort of thing when the season goes on.
Absolutely. All right. Our friend out in Denver, that's a sports Stars fan, should I say. Speaking of the local barn, random question. Do you prefer our current goal horn with Pantera or the 99-2000 goal horn that was so long had the Hey song? I personally like today better. You?
Yeah. Well, the other reason they changed the Hey, da 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 da, Hey, because that was, I think it's Gary Glitter Rock and Roll Part 2, and he was, I think...
A little bit of...
found guilty of some pretty serious crimes.
Yeah.
So I think they wanted to get rid of the association with him.
Yes, yeah. That is correct, sir.
Yeah. I will say, you know, I have a lot of memories of those old goal horns and everything. And I do have one really good memory of, I think it was Steve Ott, because he was one of the best antagonists there is. After some goal, I think the Stars were crushing some team, and Steve Ott, what he would do is they'd go da 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 da, hey, and Steve Ott apparently was getting ready for the face off and he's lined up next to the opposing player, and then they'd say da da da, and then Steve Ott would whisper to the guy, hey, and apparently that drove him nuts, and then they got into a fight after the playoff. So after the face off. So credit to Steve Ott for finding very inventive ways, as always, to antagonize his opponent. But yeah, I think it's better. I think it's better now.
I loved Ottawa. I loved him. Yep. I just thought he was I remember the game against Calgary, just off the opening faceoff, he got Jerome Iginla to drop the mitts.
Yep.
I was like, damn, that's impressive. That's some serious chirping. We haven't even started yet. Yeah. Yeah. Christopher DeHardy, there's no place like home, or at least that's what one movie once said. A very good, Wizard of Oz reference. Happy for Dadonov to bury a couple, and for Beck to get his first. Especially happy to hear the crowd's reaction to Beck's goal announcement. There's no goal quite like your first one. Yeah, you said you talked to Beck. I'm sure the smile was pretty bright. Notice that he's got some braces, and you know, he was on with the boys after on Victory Plus, and that smile was pretty big.
Yeah, even talking to him in training camp, you know, it wasn't that long ago that we were saying, who's going to win that spot? Who's going to be that 13th forward, right? And it hasn't all been roses for him either, because he came in and, you know, had that 13th forward spot and got some time because of some injuries where he was playing. But then he was moved to wing pretty quickly, and then he started getting healthy scratched. And you have to think that, you know, in his mind, he was thinking, am I going to be going back down before too long, or how long can I hang on to this spot? So getting a moment like this, right, a moment he'll never forget, scoring a poke. I mean, that's a very distinctive thing, right? It's always great to score a goal in a scrum or whatever. Maverick Bork obviously scored his first that way. But this one, I think, has a pretty good story attached to it, especially, you know, against Jeremy Swayman on the other side. That's no slouch of a goalie doing it in a game like this. I don't blame him one bit for, you know, he's worked hard in his career. It took him a while to get here. I mean, Wyatt Johnston is, you know, almost 4 years younger than him. So imagine being 4 years older than Wyatt Johnston is now, and you're just now getting your first NHL goal. Oscar Beck's been playing hockey for a long time, and, you know, he doesn't cheat the game. I think he's got a positive goal differential now. I think he's been on the ice for like 3 goals for and 2 against or something like that, if I'm remembering my stats so far this year, which for a fourth liner is fantastic, since you're not, you know, you're sometimes eating some tough zone starts. The other team's trying to put their guys out against you on the road when they get last change. So give him a lot of credit. He deserves, he earned that, every bit of that smile. So it was really good to see him, score that tonight. He was, he was really happy. I think he was getting ready as we were leaving. They had the cowboy hat in there. So I bet you there's going to be a picture out in social media, or there probably already is, of him with the cowboy hat holding his first goal puck with, I bet you it's with Blackwell and Steele, but we'll see who it's up.
That's awesome. Caleb Carter says, you guys talked about leading about home field, home ice advantage into the season. Important to take care of biz in the home barn. Yeah, completely agree, Caleb. It's really, really nice. And it's nice to gain momentum so that fans know to get in their seats early because something might happen. And when you start to build that, you know, fans are going to be more rowdy, and that provides an even better home ice advantage. Crow Wi-Fi, and if you know, you know. Let's see if Robert knows. He just simply says, Dad, is Mom a finance bro? Do you know what that reference is from, Rob?
I think he's referring to one of the commercials that often plays on Victory Plus, right?
Yeah, that is the tweet. That is the tweet of the night. Okay, so for those listening, like our friends in England and where else? Italy, you know, Switzerland, we're all over the place. You guys probably won't get this. But Victory Plus, as far as the local commercials, they let's just say they are repeating a bunch.
Yeah.
And that is one of them. Dad, is Mom a finance bro? And listen, I'm not being critical. But since Crow Wi-Fi brought it up, there is no way that Emmett Smith is getting out of that elevator and giving a low five to a random person at Choctaw. I mean, I just totally want to ask Emmett Smith and say, like, you know, like, if I next time I see Emmett Smith, I am going to, like, kind of slowly jog toward him and put my hand down by my knee.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
seeing if he will give me a low five, and or if he doesn't want to do that, point to me in the distance like he does getting out of that elevator.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, he's got to do it, right? It's the commercial. If he doesn't, he's a fraud. So, you know.
Hey, you know what? Hopefully, if this team continues to win, some more commercials will come on. Yeah. That would be wonderful.
Look, I'll say, I mean, it's in the news. Some of the other teams that are still with Bally Sports, I think maybe it's in Canada or maybe it's here, but they just partnered with, like, Amazon Prime to sell games a la carte, where you can buy just one game at a time. And I think I saw the price is $6.99 per game. So just you have all these Stars games you can watch for free. Yes, the ads, you know, it's not on demand, skip around everywhere you want and everything. They have to be paid for somehow. But Stars fans can finally watch the games anywhere in the Stars market. They can watch all the games pretty much without having to pay a dime. And, you know, it's just worth remembering how good Stars fans have it, even with, of course, the frustrations that come from seeing the same ad over and over. I would just say I'm a big mute the commercials guy, especially if I'm watching a game with friends or something like that. I'm a big mute the commercials guy. Have some conversation, do something else. I just am not a big fan of ads in general, but they pay for it, right? So I don't begrudge them at all playing the ads and even forcing you to watch the ads on breaks and stuff. I think great that if that's the model that gets the game to Stars fans, then more power to them. Good for Brad Alberts, good for the team. But yeah, if it were me, I would be muting those pretty regularly, I think, if I were having to watch them at home every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Our friend Tanner Wilson points out Plano native Stefan Nason. Is that the correct way? Or
Nason. Stefan Nason. Stefan, he was in Nason. Stars training camp a few years back.
Yeah, absolutely. He was one of the final cuts.
Yeah.
So Plano native, and he had two goals tonight. Just wanted to point that out. The last few years, he's now 31. He's getting better with age. Mm-hmm. Really, a big resurgence in Carolina as a power play specialist, and then has moved on to New Jersey. 20 games, Robert, 16 points, including 9 goals.
You know who he reminds me of? And this, they might have even played together. He reminds me, his career trajectory and coming on a little bit later and then turning into a really an offensive force. Reminds me of Kyle Palmieri a little bit.
Good one.
Who came up and was like a fine player around the margins and everything, could score a bit. But then he got on a heater a couple of years ago. Palmieri did, I think, on the power play, maybe for the Devils, if I'm remembering correctly. And he was just unstoppable. I mean, it seemed like, I know the Stars had a couple of games against him, but even outside of that, it seemed like he was scoring, you know, goal every other night. So, good for Nason. You know, again, player like that, Oscar Beck, all these guys who hang in there, put the work in.
Yeah.
It's hard not to root for those guys, right? It's hard not to be really, really happy for him. So good for Nason. Hopefully, I don't know what his contract is off the top of my head, but hopefully it gets him a little bit more security long term, because goodness knows he's worked hard enough to earn it.
Yeah, absolutely. One more for you. Oh, and I wanted to point out on the Stankoven goal where he was looking at a empty net put back off a rebound. That entire line, Ben, Johnston, and Stankoven were within 3 to 5 feet of Swayman, getting in the dirty area. And I thought that goal was a really good indicator of what the Stars were able to do, get some traffic in front. And, you know, we know this Stars team, sometimes they have a tendency, you know, some nights to play from the outside a little bit. And, you know, anytime I can see stuff like that, and that's what I love about Stankoven. He reminds me, and Craig brought this up too, reminds me a lot of Brendan Gallagher, where, you know, size nowadays is not as much a factor because of the new NHL rules. And Gallagher can really get in that dirty area and loves to collect those rebounds, doesn't mind taking a hit, or, you know, exert his physicality with that trunk that Stankoven has. And, you know, it's just good to see in tight goals.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because on that goal, I actually noted when I went back and watched it that Jamie Benn was so crucial The way he screened, you know, Pavelski and even Sagan, right? They're great at tipping goals. And Ben has tipped in a few goals in his time too. But Ben screens and then gets out of the way just in time, as well as any player I've seen, which, you know, isn't as complex a thing as deftly deflecting goals in the way Pavelski would, but it's still a huge thing, especially for your line, especially at Ben's stage of his career. Finding different ways to create offense is huge. And a player as big as Ben is, he screened Swayman perfectly. He had absolutely no clue where the puck was after it hit the pile because players were crashing the net, like you mentioned. But Ben also didn't just go there and just kind of stand there. He very tactically goes and screens Swayman, gets big turns, and gets out of the way in time for the puck to get through a little bit further. And then Stankoven was also exactly where he should be, just far enough away from the crease so that he can grab the puck and put it away. Yeah, it was a great line goal and one they've really been deserving. I think Johnston, it might have been a power play goal, but Johnston scored a goal against Pittsburgh. And it's good to see Stankoven get one too, because that line, if that line can get going, it'll solve a lot of problems for the Stars long term. Because as much as Hintz and Robertson, you want to see a little bit more from them. If you've got Wyatt Johnston's line going, whatever line he's on, the Stars are going to be just fine with the Duchesne line going as well as it is.
And Stacey Nolan will end with this, says, hello, Gavin. Hello, Robert. Do you think the Stars should put Stankoven back up on Hintz Robertson line? I don't like Dadonov. Just think they need a strong on puck hunter dog on a bone. Put Dadonov back with Ben Johnston. Thoughts? Have a great one. Thanks for all the podcasts. Thank you, Stacey. Boy, I'll tell you what, it's tough to move Dadonov after what he did tonight. But interesting as far as, and this brings up an interesting question to end this podcast, Robert. Do you move personnel to help Robertson or Hintz, or do you separate them to maybe kind of get them scoring that way?
They don't want to separate them based on what DeBoer has said lately. They really do view things as pairs, right? Viewing Johnston and Ben kind of as a pair, although you might say Johnston and Stankoven as well. But Sagan and Duchesne were pairing last year, right? But Marchman also this year has been indispensable. Marchman also, we haven't talked enough about how good Marchman has been. He looks like he's playing with a world of confidence. He was juggling pucks with his shoulder tonight to himself, scored another goal. Man, that there, you just can't say enough about any of those three, about Sagan, Duchesne, or Marchment, but I digress. But I believe that they want to see Hintz and Robertson become as dynamic a pairing as those other pairings and those other lines. They want to see that. They really believe at the start of the year, it all looked primed for Johnston to be up next to them on that line. But when Maverick Bork wasn't ready to go at the start of the year, they had to have a third line center, and Johnston was the logical person to put there. And Bork, even after he came back and had some time there, he didn't show them that he could hold that spot down and make that line as productive as they thought it needed to be. And so Johnston has stayed there, and he hasn't gone back up. But I think, talking about, you know, where Dadonov or Stankoven needs to go, I think Stankoven is a fantastic player, and I think Dadonov is a better player than most fans. You know, fans love picking on the 11th or 12th forward for some reason, but Dadonov, my goodness, he's found money, right? He's that, you mentioned the Gurionov trade. I mean, that's exactly what you hope to do with a first-round pick who doesn't really end up working out, is turn him into a useful piece, and that's exactly what they've done with Dadonov. You know, yeah, it'd be great if he was like a second-line forward, but Dadonov has been perfectly fine in the role that he has. I really believe that. He's not blocking anyone. If Maverick Bork were playing well enough to demand a spot on that top line or something like that, he would be there. So I think blaming Dadonov or saying Dadonov needs to move is kind of the backwards way of looking at it. I'm not saying that the tweeter is saying that.
Right.
But at this point, you know, Stankoven was up with Robertson and Hintz, and I didn't see them, you know, scoring tons of points while he was up there with them before. So at this point, you know, if he's clicking with Johnston down that line with Ben, I don't know who you move up there. Unless you want to break up the Duchesne, Marchment, and Sagan line, and who on earth wants to do that right now?
Right.
So I don't know who what you really do about that, because they moved Stankoven up there before. It didn't seem like it helped very much. You can do that, but then you've got one fewer player in the third line, and now you're asking Wyatt Johnston to get going with two of the oldest players on the team skating next to him. So exactly. Is that really fair to Johnston? I don't know. I think really it all got kind of messed up at the start of the year with the injuries, and until Maverick Bork somehow on the fourth line demands to take over that spot back as third line center, if that ever happens. Until that happens, I don't really see anyone else kind of coming along to save them, whether it's Stankoven moving up to that top line again, or down or whatever. I think it's going to be up to the best players making the most money to lead the way. And I think that's where the responsibility appropriately should lie. But I do think the coaches probably are a little bit more worried about it than they're going to let on right now. So it wouldn't shock me if before too long you see maybe Jason Robertson moving back down and switching with Jamie Benn like he did a few games ago. And I actually thought Robertson had a good game when he started on the third line a few games back. So it wouldn't shock me if they try that again before too long.
Brand new article by Robert on starsthoughts.com, The Winding Roads of Maverick Bourque, Matt Dumba, Nils Lundqvist, and Liam Bischel. So that's up, as well as the D Magazine article, which highlights his trip through the course of Finland. So we have that. And also, we need to get Robert's Twitter/X follows up. We need to get him over 3,000. He should be at 10,000 because, you know, for my money, he is one of the top follows as far as Stars coverage, going to games, going to practices, and as well as Stars Thoughts and D Magazine. So, sir, always great to hear from you. Love your energy. Love what you bring to the table. Really enjoyed this podcast with you.
Thanks, Gavin. Appreciate it. Always fun. Yeah.
Absolutely. Always fun with you, the listeners, who bring in your feedback as well. So that's going to do it for another edition of Spits and Suds. Tomorrow, Sean Shapiro joins us, our NHL insider, and we'll get thoughts around the league as well as the Stars from Sean. And another edition of Spits and Suds tomorrow right here. Have a great day, everybody.